Thank you for listening to the New Hope Christian Church podcast, recorded December 29th, 2019. This week's sermon, The Road to Gilgal, by Troy Vandeloon.
Now, like a lot of people, I use my GPS app when I'm traveling. I didn't need it today. I was good today. But I do it. And I'm sure some of you do that as well. You know, it sounds a little bit like this.
Head north on South Center Street toward College Drive.
Yeah, head north. Yep. I made it here. That's good. So it sounds like that. And it usually works, right? It usually does work, but sometimes it can create kind of interesting dilemmas, if you will. I don't know if anything like that's ever happened to you. Jessica B. from Louisiana says that we were in Chattanooga when the GPS told us to turn right on Milliliter King. Well, the street was ML King, right? And I live just off ML King. So Rhonda from Detroit says, I was driving to a hotel to give a presentation, and the GPS directed me to exit the freeway and drive for a few miles on a road that went from paved to dirt. Yep. Have you been there? And eventually, I came to a high fence, and it had this barbed wire on top of it. And at this spot, there was a man standing there. It was a guard standing there. And she rolled down her window and said, I'm guessing this isn't the hotel. And he said, shaking his head slowly, well, not unless you're a guest of the state. So Ann C. from Halliday, New York, says, I was driving down south in an unfamiliar area when my GPS told me to make a right turn. I was on a bridge. That one has actually happened to me, yes. And Nita M. from Monroe, Washington, says, I used my new navigation app to help me find a way to a writer's conference. And after a long drive, I parked my car, and first things first, immediately I headed for the crowded restroom. I found a stall, I settled in, and that's when a loud and clear, distinct voice from my phone announced, you've arrived at your destination. Right? They usually work, but sometimes, to be honest with you, I am much more of a paper map kind of a guy. Now, I know that dates me, of course, but I used to love atlases. Okay, raise your hand if you know what an atlas is. Oh, good, good, good. So if you don't, it's just a book of maps, right? So I used to love atlases. Now, my dad, who was here today, was a member of the AAA. Dad, I told him it wasn't AA. It was AAA. Okay, last service. That's good, too. But he was a member of AAA, and they had these amazing maps. Like, you could go in if you were going on vacation, and they would be page by page, and of each and every turn. They were amazing. Actually, they were the pre-GPS people, right? AAA was. Now, that's how I like my maps. I decided that when I was going on vacation, I wanted to be in the navigator's chair when Mom would give it up. I wanted to be in the navigator's chair, and I would look at each one of those pages and just love to direct. That's how I love my maps. Now, since Becky and I have moved back to central Iowa, to Des Moines, a few months ago, I've been drawn to the books of Joshua and Judges. Especially Judges. It was kind of a weird place to be drawn, but that's what I've been drawn to. And these books chronicle the time that the Israelites, God's chosen people, moved into the Promised Land, and then actually the time after they moved into the Promised Land. Because all of us know with God that our journey doesn't stop when we enter His Promised Land, does it? It continues all through our life, just with like theirs. And their journey was filled with seasons of great faith, and seasons of doubt and disillusionment and even rebellion. Yeah, in Judges chapter 2, we're told that the people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had seen all the great things that the Lord had done for Israel. But after the whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. They forsook the Lord, the God of the ancestors. They followed and worshiped various gods of the people around them. So God sold them into the hands of their enemies. all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. And whenever Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, and they were in great distress. And then the Lord raised up judges or deliverers who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. And whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge and saved them out of their hands of their enemies as long as the judge lived. But when the judge died, the people returned to their ways even more corrupt than before, and in would come more raiders. And it was a cycle like this for many years. Now the first judge's name, does anybody know the first judge's name? It was actually Othniel. Othniel. That's right. And there's not a lot written about Othniel other than the cycle here. And the second judge, though, where we'll kind of land today, was with a guy by the name of Ehud. Ehud. Apparently, God likes to call people with odd names. And I want to encourage you, whether your name is odd or not, to turn your Bibles today or to get out your phone app and look at the Bible in Judges chapter 3, where we're going to land today. Judges chapter 3, we're going to start in verse 12 with the story of the Israelites and Ehud. I'll be reading out of the NIV version. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, and Judges. They're in the Old Testament. Judges chapter 3, starting in verse 12. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And because they did this evil, the Lord gave Eglon, king of Moab, power over Israel. Getting the Ammonites and the Amalekites to join him, Eglon came and attacked Israel, and they took possession of the city of Palms. The Israelites were subject to Eglon, king of Moab, for 18 years. And again the Israelites cried out to the Lord, and he gave them a deliverer, Ehud, a left-handed man, the son of Gera, the Benjamite. The Israelites sent him with tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Now Ehud had made a double-edged sword about a cubit long, which he strapped to his right thigh under his clothing. He presented the tribute to Eglon, king of Moab, who was a very fat man. And after Ehud had presented the tribute, he sent on their way those who had carried it. But on reaching the stone images near Gilgal, he himself went back to Eglon and said, "Your Majesty, I have a secret message for you." And the king said to his attendants, "Leave us." And they all left. Ehud then approached him while he was sitting alone in the upper room of the palace and said, "I have a message from God for you." As the king rose from his seat, Ehud reached with his left hand, drew the sword with his right thigh, and plunged it into the king's belly. Even the handle sank in after the blade, and the bowels discharged. Ehud did not pull the sword out, and the fat closed in over it. Then Ehud went out to the porch. He shut the doors of the upper room behind him and locked them. After he had gone, the servant came and found the doors of the upper room locked. And they said, "He must be relieving himself," that's right, "in the upper room," I heard that laugh, "of the palace." They waited to the point of embarrassment, but when he did not open the doors of the room, they took a key and unlocked them. There they saw their Lord fallen to the floor and dead. While they waited, Ehud got away. He passed by the stone images and escaped to Syria. When he arrived there, he blew a trumpet in the hill country of Ephraim, and the Israelites went down with him from the hills, with him leading them. "Follow me," he cried, "for the Lord has given Moab, your enemy, into your hands." So they followed him down and took possession of the fords of the Jordan that led to Moab. They allowed no one to cross over, and at that time they struck down about 10,000 Moabites, all vigorous and strong. Not one escaped. That day, Moab was made subject to Israel, and the land had peace for how long? Yeah, 80 years. Actually, that peace was the longest peace they had in between with the judges and all the other judges. That's right. This is an amazing story. I mean, it really is filled with intrigue and espionage, covert ops, tense drama, and even a sense of humor. Did you pick it up? But over all of this, this story is really a story of God's plan and someone, Ehud, faithfully carrying out that plan. So after Othniel, the Israelites did evil, forgetting God and following other gods. So God strengthened who? Moab, which Moab is the nation directly to the east of where Israel was, across the Jordan River, their bordering nations. And he, the king Eglon of Moab, enlisted two other desert clans. Did you catch those? The Ammonites and the Amalekites. And these two groups Israel had taken care of as they passed into the promised land. So the Ammonites and the Amalekites were very anxious to get revenge. They were ready. They were just waiting for the call. And they joined Eglon and they overpowered the Israelites. Now, Eglon overpowers Israel, and where does he set shop up at? The city of palms. No, not Miami, Florida. It was Jericho. Jericho is the city of palms. Now, you remember what happened to Jericho, right? Yeah, the walls came a-tumbling down, right? And so Jericho at this time wouldn't have been a bustling metropolis because it hadn't been enough time. Maybe a small village there on the outskirts of the old ruins of Jericho. But Eglon decided to set up shop there. Why? I think one of the reasons was because he wanted to spite the Israelites. He could have come in and taken over and then went back over the border. Would have had the same results. But instead, he set up a little palace there on the edge of Jericho, on the way to Moab, really, there. Now, Jericho would have also been in the territory of someone else there. It was the territory of the Israelite tribe of Benjamin, which we're told is Ehud's tribe. So it's not a surprise that God raised up someone from the area most affected to carry out his plan. Well, God does that every once in a while, doesn't he? Raise somebody up from the area. His plan, God's plan, it really was God's plan, was for Ehud to take a caravan of tribute to King Eglon. Probably was clothing, grain, could have been a few jewels, food to the king in tribute. But the goal was to gain the trust of Eglon and to get personal access to the king, at which point, Ehud would send his caravan away, tell the king he had a secret message, in which he would come close to the king, because he did have a message for him, a dagger, and kill the king. Because they'd be alone, no one would know, and Ehud would lock the doors and escape. After which, he would travel to Ephraim, north of Jericho, where the men of Israel would be waiting for Ehud's signal to attack. Now, on paper, this looks like a really good plan, doesn't it? A really great plan. Looks like that could work. But when you look at it really closely, it was also filled with great risk, wasn't it? Everything had to go just right. And who was at the greatest risk? Ehud. He was the center of all of that risk. Now, here's a couple of details for you, of examples of that. One is that Ehud had to get his dagger strapped to his right thigh through security. Now, this wasn't airport security, but it was the king's security, so it would have been very high, right? He had to get the dagger past his security. Now, this is one of the reasons that people who look at this think that it's mentioned that he was left-handed. That Ehud was left-handed. In those days, when a man was a leader, most of the time, almost all the time, they were right-handed. Okay, left-handed people in here? Yeah, there you go. Loud and proud. That's right. So most of them were right-handed. So it's possible that his security got a little lax, and they were looking on the wrong side for his sword. And that's why they mentioned that he was left-handed. He had to get past the security. The next thing he had to do was he had to win over King Eglon, right? He had to get a personal viewing, a personal meeting with the king without any of his guards around. That's a trick, especially for someone in an enemy of the state situation going on there. So that was another one. No easy task. After all of this, he would have to be able to escape, wouldn't he? So he could get up to Ephraim to alert the men of Israel so they could attack. Had to be just the right amount of time so that it could be a surprise attack as well. All of these details, everything had to go just right. All of that makes this story and God's plan all the more incredible. Now, I've read this story I don't know how many times, a lot of times, mainly because I was a youth minister and middle school boys love this story, you know. So, but I've read this a lot of times. But the last time I read this, when I was moving, I noticed a detail that I'd never seen before. It's in verses 18 and 19. Go there again with me. Judges 3, 18 and 19. It says this: after Ehud had presented the tribute, he sent on their way those who had carried it. Now, nothing out of the ordinary here, right? That was the plan. That's what they were supposed to do. Everything is going as planned. Verse 19. But, Now, I'm no expert in covert ops, but I imagine that you don't want too many buts in your plan, right? You want everything to be planned out, and you want it to go just as planned. Where'd the but come from? Here we go. But on reaching the stone images near Gilgal, Ehud left the king. And he didn't leave with the caravan. They would have went the other way. This Gilgal was towards Moab. What is Ehud doing? Have you noticed that before? I'd never noticed that. Why would he leave? If the plan was to get a secret hearing, leaving surely would have only created suspicion. So what's happened? How did Ehud end up at Gilgal? Surely if part of the plan was for Ehud to go to Gilgal first and then return to Jericho, that would have been mentioned as part of the plan. Was Ehud having second thoughts about God's plan? Second thoughts. I've had those before. Have you? You know what I'm talking about. You hear from God. You believe you know God's plan, so you make a series of decisions. But then when it's time, you start to wonder, are you sure, God? Are you sure that was actually you talking and not my burrito? You know, were you sure that that's what you want me to do? I don't think I can do that. Or God allows something to happen. I didn't think that would be a part of the plan. And suddenly, you are on the road to doubt and uncertainty after being so sure of God's plan before. Have you ever been on that road? The road to Gilgal, like Ehud? Life's like that. You know that, right? We are like that. Life doesn't always go as planned, or as we've planned, even with God, or can I say maybe especially with God. And we end up being in a situation that we weren't counting on, that we don't really want to be in. Bad things, unexplainable things, pain, disillusionment, and we end up on the road to Gilgal. Not so sure if this is God's plan that we really want God's plan. I get it. I understand. I've been on that road. But thankfully, that's not the end of the story. Verse 19. But on reaching the stone images near Gilgal, he himself went back to Eglon, and he carried out the plan. What causes Ehud to turn around? It couldn't have been the situation. That didn't change, did it? In fact, maybe because he left, it now had gotten even trickier. Now, was the mentioning of the stone images at Gilgal here simply geographical, or was there something else? Most scholars offer two possibilities here. One is that Eglon and Moab, or some others, had set up stone images of false gods at this place called Gilgal, right in between Moab and Israel. Now, traditional Gilgal, is where they found some ruins, is 3 miles outside of Jericho, east of Jericho. And what they found isn't really a village at all. Instead, there's a large outcropping, kind of like a mountain, I guess you would say, but a little smaller, but definitely a large overhang. And below it, they uncovered a gathering and a worship area with a round altar. It's kind of like an amphitheater below it, where a large group could gather. Now, this all fits with Joshua chapter 4, when the Israelites and Joshua were instructed by God to enter the promised land after Moses' death. They were instructed to cross the Jordan River, and as they crossed, to grab large stones, 12 of them, one for each stone. And then the place that they camped in, where they went from there into the promised land, their first camp, they were to put those stones so that when the people saw them in future times, they would look back and say, I remember what God did with us there. The 12 stones, they put them there. And what did they name the first place they camped at in the promised land where they put these stones? Anyone? Gilgal. It was Gilgal. It's where Ehud was. In Joshua chapter 4, verse 19. Could it be the exact stones that the Israelites carried out of the river that Ehud was seeing? I don't know for sure, but you know what? That would be just like my God, wouldn't it? For the Israelites, Gilgal would always be a place to remember, a holy place, a set apart place to remember what God had done and wanted to do again. For Ehud, Gilgal was also a place of remembering a decision. It was a holy place, the place where he decided to trust God once again and to go back and trust God's plan. How about you? How about me? Are we going to trust God's plan for you and for me and go back? When it comes down to it, I don't really trust my GPS. That's why I always want to see the destination first. Are any of you like that? I go to the place on the bottom where it has the directions and it has every single turn there, right? And I make sure that it's what I want, that those directions work for me. That's not how life works with God, is it? It isn't a one-time message download where I get the whole plan for my life. Yes, he's told me the end destination, but he doesn't tell me everything along the way, in between. Instead, God's plan for us is a collection of, Troy, turn here. Okay, wait. Turn here. Wait. Wait, turn here. That's how God's plan is. It's a series of follow me's. Follow me. Now, I read a devotion this past week talking about Mary, the mother of Jesus, over Christmas. And Luke 2:19, and again, the same language comes up in 2:51. It says that as Mary saw the baby, and then later in life, saw Jesus grow up into a man, that Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the writer of the devotion said that the word pondered there means to thread something together, like beads in a necklace. Do you think that Mary understood the first time that the angel told her she was going to have a baby. Do you think she understood the whole plan? No. God said, Mary, turn here. And she said, yes. Think about Mary's lifetime. It had some pain in it, didn't it? Can you imagine the pain that Mary felt with Jesus' words or with Jesus' actions or things that happened, right? You're not my family. This is my family. Remember that? Jesus on the cross. There was a lot of pain for Mary in Jesus' lifetime. But what did Mary do? Mary threaded together all those things and pondered them in her heart. She thread them together. She followed. She said yes. Now, God doesn't say that our lives will be without pain or struggle. He doesn't say that, does he, when we follow him? He never even tells us that if we follow him, everything will work out. The plans that we have will all work out. But he does tell us, and he does call us to follow me, to turn around, to come back to my plan for you. Now, what does that look like? For Ehud, it was a physical turnaround at Gilgal and carrying out of God's plan. Think about this past year, 2019. What was your year like? Was it a great year? Did you have so many praises? Praise God, soak those in, right? But for most of us, they were a series of ups and downs. For some of you, it was more downs than ups, right? God doesn't promise us easy roads, right? He promises, though, a strength that passes all understanding and a hope that is none other. So as you look at this new year in 2020, are you willing to follow God's plan no matter the outcome? For the first time, during hard times, or for another time? As you look back at the year, and as you look forward at the next one, let's remember the hope that he gives us.